Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
I mean, the timing on that was amazing.
Was it? It nailed it this week.
I was absolutely seamless. There was no dead air, which is 1,000,000% responsible to the previous show. Not our responsibility. We start at bang on 12 and we do that every week.
So well, our fans turn in at 12. They tune in at 12 exactly on the dot and they want it to start dead on.
And it does.
It does.
It always does.
They don't want to miss the start. They don't want to miss the first 2 seconds.
But if they do tune in a couple of seconds early and just hear dead air, that's not our responsibility. We're not contractually obligated or legally allowed to be on air before midday. It's my contract. I'm a heavy sleeper. Didn't sleep very well last night.
Last night?
No.
Oh, no. How'd you feel this morning?
Drained.
I've got a headache this morning. Got a big headache.
Why have you got a headache?
Don't know. Carbon monoxide poisoning. That's what I always think.
Corona.
Something like that. Coronavirus. Could be anything. Yeah. Maybe not had enough water or something, probably, though.
Sure. Maybe just drink some water now. There you go. Get it down, yeah.
This is like ASMR, isn't it?
Yeah. Jordan Brooks would like this.
He would love it.
Big fan. Big fan of ASMR. Mm. That's what he was a fan of.
Oh, yes, he was.
Yeah, that's why I said it.
No, I thought because he did that show, didn't he? He did a show with...
Headphones.
Headphones, oh. I guess was...
A bit rude. I'd have taken them out. God, it's stuff like this for 2 hours, people. You're listening to Five Star Family Fan Club. Fun Size Fan Club.
Fun Size.
Five Star Family Fun Size Fan Club.
Clubs, well, shorter
we used
ones.
To. It was an hour.
Yeah, the Fun Size ones.
It boosted
now.
Us up to 2 hours.
Like two Milky Ways in a pack. Two Bounties in a pack.
Was there any news about Snickers this week?
I don't know. I haven't heard any.
Oh. Sean Harries was tweeting about Snickers and what? I was just and I couldn't work out what was going on.
No. Can you look that up, please, Natalie?
Are Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston back together?
Are they? No.
I thought that as of February the 11th, they've adopted another child. That's what I saw. Jennifer Aniston.
No.
Look it up. Brad Pitt, Jennifer Aniston.
Natalie looks delighted about it, though. Would you be happy for that?
Do you know what? If I found out that Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston were together again, I don't know if they are, but I saw something and it looked like they were back together again. I mean, why is it taking you so long to look it up? I mean, all you need to do... Don't look up Snickers. We've moved on. We're floundering on this Brad Pitt and...
Are they pleasant to each other?
Just look it up! I don't want your opinion. I want fucking cold hard facts. Fucking hell. The amount of time it takes you to press the button and say, I don't think they... Oh, he convinced her to do the Friends reunion. Well.
He convinced her to.
It's sad, isn't it? There was a little window of my life that was happier, thinking that they were back together again. Doesn't have any bearing.
But they are obviously themselves friends then, aren't they? If Brad Pitt can send her an email and say,
why not?
Jennifer, why don't you do this for Friends?
I don't know when she'll fit it in, though, because she's busy doing Murder Mystery 2 with Adam Sandler.
Is she really?
Yeah, biggest streamed movie in Netflix history.
Is it really?
Yeah, huge. It was huge.
Wow.
Mhm.
Good for both of them.
Anyway, I'm Nick Helm.
And my name.
No. I'm Nick.
Yes, correct. And I'm Nathaniel Metcalf.
You're listening to Five Star Family Fun Size Fan Club.
Five Star Fan Club. What's the first rule of Fan Club, Nick?
Tell your friends about Fan Club. Second rule of Fan Club is please
for the love of God.
Just tell them.
Tell your friends.
Nathaniel?
Yes?
Have you listened to Fan Club?
Every week, between 12 and 2.
Good for you.
I listen to all of them.
Good for you.
I listen to them in stereo.
Good for you. Good for you.
Have you listened to Fan Club?
Not once. Not even when I'm doing it. Not even when I'm
doing
it.
What you got playing in your headphones?
Jordan Brooks.
So, you're a big fan.
Big fan. I'm a big fan. So anyway, what have you been up to this week?
What have I been up to? What have I been a fan of this week?
Yeah, what have you been? I just do think it's weird that we haven't mentioned coronavirus once, and there's going to be kind of like a historic document. These will last forever, these shows.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So this
and
is the week,
historic,
isn't it?
There's a historic document, and we never mentioned it.
It's like when you watch Have I Got Old News For You, and you have to try and figure out what they're talking about.
It's foot and mouth.
Foot and mouth.
Swine flu.
It's coronavirus. I'm like much more panicked about coronavirus. I think I've come to terms with I will get it. I think it just feels like
sure.
I will get. I touch my face a lot.
Sure.
Touch my
yeah,
face.
I know. I noticed that about myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not judging you.
I do know. I often find myself very much like Jeff Goldblum. I often find that I like touching my
He's
face.
What caused it?
I think he was the start of it.
Yeah.
He's patient zero.
He was in, people were trying to eat him in a Chinese market, and that's what started it. So, yeah, I'm bored shitless about the coronavirus.
Oh, yeah.
I just think either wipe us out.
Well, it's not going to wipe us out
or
either.
Fuck off.
It's basically
I mean?
Just going to give us flu.
One or the other, but don't tease us. I feel like the coronavirus has been tickling our balls for the last, 2 months?
This feels like a big deal. They've moved the James Bond film.
They've moved the James Bond film, yeah.
Though apparently that
it can't be because it's shit.
No, apparently it's because of the Chinese audience, which would account for, I think, 25% of its whole earnings.
Just release it there later.
But then it'll be pirated, won't it? They'll be out.
Sure. Alright, yeah.
Too late, innit? You can't wait. You can't wait 6 months now.
I just touched my face 3 times in the space of
yeah. And I move
that.
This microphone. Who's spoken into this microphone? He's probably got coronavirus. Joey Page, has he got corona? Probably.
It's not a breathing thing, though, is it? It's not an airborne thing.
No, but I guess if he's touched
things. But if he's touched the microphone with his eyeball, and now I touch it with my eyeball.
You've got it.
I've got it now.
You've got corona eye.
Corona eye.
Corona.
I got. That's. I keep singing it.
Yeah, me too. You can't help it.
I got. I was filming over the weekend, and everyone in the green room was talking about it, and it's just like, oh fucking hell! It's just groups of people talking about it. I think the misinformation about it spreads faster than the actual bloody disease.
Nice one.
Thanks. It's not a disease, it's a virus. Is there a difference? Is there a difference? There is now.
Virus.
So it reminded me when I was doing a show with James and Josh in Edinburgh in 2009. Our one-star...
Your one-star show.
Acaster, Helm and Widdicombe live at the Voodoo Bar. And it was at the time of swine flu. And it was the worst fucking gig ever.
Oh, I remember that venue you're in. It was
so
absolutely
bad.
Appalling.
It was poor. So there was shows on before us. I think we probably talked about it when Josh was on. But there were shows on before us. And I did my show Bad Things Happen in Trees at the piano bar at the end of Prince's Street, which is about as far out as you really want to do a gig, I think.
Mm.
And our one was like, well, your one was like 50 feet further along than me.
And I was furious about that.
And our one was another 50 or 60 feet further than that. And it was on a very quiet road that built up a triangle of roads that was called the Bermuda Triangle. There's a pubic triangle in, I don't know what I pointed at you, Natalie. There's a pubic triangle in Edinburgh.
A grass market, isn't it?
Grass market, which is where all of the sex shops and strip clubs are. And then there's... the Bermuda Triangle, where it's called.
No
that.
One goes.
It's called that because when you go there, no one hears from you again, right? And that's where our gig was. And
in the second week, they built roadworks around our venue, so just like they couldn't even walk past.
It was just—it's a terrible area. If you're playing in Edinburgh, and
someone says the west end of Edinburgh is quite actually that's where all there.
It's near the other station. Turn them down. Just cancel all your plans. Burn your flyers and just have a
holiday.
Have Have a, what you should do, just like every time you got any loose change, every time you got any loose change between now and then, put it aside, and then every day when you're at home, just throw some of it in a bucket, and then you can say, "Oh, I earned that in August." It's absolutely pointless. So we'd get like audiences of this is James Acaster, Josh Widdicombe, and me, and. Between us, we could pull in an audience of one. Sometimes we'd get... We would outnumber audience members.
Did you think you're in the Voodoo Rooms? That's quite a nice venue.
Yeah, that's exactly what we thought. We thought Voodoo... But the Voodoo Bar, that sounds familiar. Yeah, that's
I know that one. It's nice, that.
And we were just like, we were trying to come up with a good, like a clever title, and I was just like, we'll just call it Live at the Voodoo, because that's what it is. And what I think Josh probably compared, and James went on first, and I went on second. And I was doing my breakdown thing. I was doing my solid 20, to silence. So James would go on and get very upset. And I would go on and pretend to have a breakdown. But when no one's laughing, it's just theatre.
And also, if there's only three people in, it just looks like you're having a breakdown.
Once we had three other comedians came to see us, who I've not heard of since, and they sat on the front row with their arms crossed, and they just eyeballed us. They stared us out while we were on stage, right? And there was another person at the back that was sat by themselves. Anyway, that was the 3 weeks review. we got one star. And I don't think I'm pretty sure James has never read it. I've never read it. Every so often, Darren Maskell will tweet it at us, and we'll be like, "No, I don't think so." It was just an absolutely pointless gig, and it was, and so almost a similar thing happened to me the next year, where I did my solo show, lovely, sell-out performances, Daniel Kitson, Jimmy Carr, Cunt and the Gang, Daniel came to see me. Then I'd go off, I'd have to wait around the area for 3 hours to die on my ass every single night, doing 20 minutes. And this happened like in 2009, with Bad Things Happening in Trees. So the venue was, there's people on before us in the venue, but the venue would always open the door for us. Like, he'd be unlocking when we got there. And we were like...
4 or 5 o'clock.
Yeah, what? No, it was later than that. It was like 7 o'clock. It's like, what happened to the other... To the other gigs that were on in this venue? It's like, they just didn't happen. They didn't happen. And so you go in, everything would smell of bleach, and then you go down this horrible little dingy corridor, down some stairs. Oh, the specials board was spelt Spiels, because they couldn't be bothered to put the middle letters in there. I've got a photo of it, and you'd go down this dingy thing, and like all of a sudden, you know, like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when the guy enters the house for the first time, just before you see Leatherface, and then the door flies open, and Leatherface grabs him and pulls him in. That's what the entrance to our venue was like. You'd go in, and it'd be like this deserted bleach. Why does it smell of bleach? This deserted bleach smelling venue, right? And then you'd go in through this like industrial door, and you'd go down these creepy stairs, and there'd be like a separate bar. And in the bar, there were lighting fittings with smashed light bulbs, and like, it was fucking, but smashed light bulbs. It was a venue. Do you know what I mean? It's an Edinburgh venue. So if you do comedy, then be really careful about what you're signing up for.
I don't think that happens now. I think they don't even bother. They really don't bother.
It just used to be anywhere with a roof.
Yeah.
And not even that sometimes. Sometimes it's not a roof. Sometimes it's the room above you floor. And it's fucking... there'd be lighting fittings all smashed. They weren't like proper seats. There were some seats, but there were a lot of kind of like bean bags, and but soiled bean bags. And then there were sort of like partially deflated balloons on the wall.
I remember they'd have like stream, like the insides of like when you get like party poppers and things all over the floor.
It looked like something very wrong had happened at a children's birthday party. It was absolutely fucking horrific, right? And the whole place stank. And then eventually what we did is we found that there was a big bucket filled with water. That, but you know, rotten water, that had been covered over with the newspaper because they couldn't be bothered to deal with it. But I don't mean like a bucket. I mean like a barrel, like a huge, low barrel. And so we did that. And then I think James had to leave early at the end of the festival. And so it was just me and Josh that were doing it for like a couple of days. And me and
I did that show one day, about halfway through. I don't think anyone could bear it.
I mean, it was.
And James was convinced that someone was going to check up on us.
We hated it so much. And yeah, so James left early. So me and Josh were stuck together for a couple of days. And the gods smiled on us because Josh got swine flu. So we had to cancel. And I would never be more delighted for a friend of mine to be ill. It's just like, what, we don't have to do the last 3 days? I think it might have even been 2 days. I was so happy he was ill. So I would just sort of like, yeah, I'd finish early for the day. It was brilliant. I think he got better.
You haven't heard much about him since, have you?
Haven't really heard about Josh since.
No. We did, one day we did our show, and the audience was a hen do, and the other group of people were genuinely the people that did puppetry of the penis. And we were like, oh my God, this is like the worst audience you can possibly have.
Did they have their dicks out?
No, no.
Could have been worse then, mate. Could have been worse.
There was a lot of people in the room asking for them to.
They could have been manipulating their penises to look like you.
If they manipulated to look like other audience members, I'd have been delighted.
We've got three in. Oh, no.
It's a tall lad at the back.
A tall lad and two shorter ones. Oh, yikes. Edinburgh, amazing.
Best days of your life.
Well, I did my first one in 1996.
Yeah,
and it's like, fucking hell. Yeah, I mean, I do have a lot of good memories. Even about that show, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, sort of. I can look back at it and find it really funny.
Do you know what? I don't talk about bad things happening in trees because I smashed it every single day. Every single day. It was an absolute joy. Yeah, there were some of my best jokes were in that up to that point. and there was like songs in there that I still sing, and it was like really memorable.
Great show.
It was a really fucking great show. You sound like a wanker talking about it. The best story is the one about Acaster Helm and Widdicombe live at the Voodoo Bar, because fucking hell, what a, oh my god.
It's like you can't have an Edinburgh where it's just, you're having a nice time. It's impossible to just have one.
No, you can't.
You can't go, I've done this show and it's really great.
It's like in 2012 when there was the Olympics and everyone was like going, oh, I'm really struggling for numbers. And I was like, I just can't relate. Can't relate. Sold out every single day. I'm yet to have a bad Edinburgh.
There's a few stories in my head that I realise every time I go to say them, I go, definitely can't tell that story.
Why?
Just they involve real people. That it probably wouldn't even be that funny for the listeners.
Sure. Okay.
But maybe I'll tell you after.
Okay.
Some amusing.
Sure.
Shouldn't even have mentioned it.
Brilliant. I'll just cannibalise my life. Edinburgh was. But you can't talk about the positive stuff, can you?
No.
Without being like a complete arsehole. No. Or maybe not arsehole, but changing the subject, I've been seeing Steve Coogan on a lot of chat shows recently, and that took me down a rabbit hole. And some of his stories. Like, the punchline is, I was going to get beaten up in a chip shop. then the guy recognised me and said he was a massive fan.
That's a terrible story.
And you go, well. And he's told that story on his cheese and ham sandwich DVD, where it was a fish and chip shop. And then he's told it again on Jimmy Kimmel, and it's a burger bar. And you go, I mean, did you say it's a fish and chip shop? Yeah.
They'll understand.
And
you're from the UK.
If they don't understand, you explain what a fish and chip shop is. You know, you get another joke out of that. You go, well, in the UK, we eat battered fish. You know, it's hilarious. But do you know what I mean? It's just like, so he's like made little changes to it, but he hasn't changed it. And in the cheese and ham sandwich DVD, it's a video The fan goes, I've got all of your videos. And in the Jimmy Kimmel interview, he says, I've got all your DVDs. And he goes, he's updating the story.
Yeah. He wants it, economy, isn't it? Economy of storytelling.
Sure.
He just doesn't want to go.
He doesn't want to go VHS. VHS was a format that we used.
Was he talking in his mid-Atlantic accent on Jimmy Kimmel as well?
Sure. I think he's just a nervous man. Doesn't want to talk about his own real life, which is fair enough. Fair enough. It was a few years ago, the Jimmy Kimmel interview.
Sure.
He wasn't wearing glasses in it. And he wears glasses in the ones that he's doing now for greed. There you go. I spend a lot of time on my own. What have you... Snickers, Welsh language, Twitter jibe sparks anger. Snickers has apologised for a misjudged tweet that compared Welsh place names to someone who sat on a keyboard. The company's UK Twitter... Oh, that's a good joke. Uh-huh. That's a very strong joke. There must have been a whole group of people that gone to a comedy club and stole it off some open mic in their first 5 minutes. The company's UK Twitter account posted names such as... Yeah. I'm not going to... Followed by the message, a place in Wales or someone sat on a keyboard. A thread. Right. The reason for the post is unclear and it was later deleted. But it provoked fury from many users who accused the chocolate bar maker of racism and xenophobia. Bloody hell. Just a bit of chocolate in it.
It seems a weird thing to post because it's not related to Snickers either, is it? It's just like content for its own sake.
But Snickers is also a word for laughter.
That's Snickers, isn't it?
Snickers. You can say Snickers as
can
well.
You? Okay.
So maybe it's them trying to elicit snickers of laughter. I don't know. Oh, should we do some fan mail?
Yeah, why not?
I'm just out of sorts this week.
I'm enjoying it.
Where are we? Oh, yeah, Asher. Happy birthday, Asher. I hope your drive to London is good and whatever you're doing in London. Oh, you're going to your grandparents. Well, I hope you have a nice time. Hope you all have a nice time. And if you're all listening together and you've got there, have a great afternoon, you lovely bunch of cunts.
Well, you've said this without reading the email. You've sort of read it in your head.
She had a rubbish week.
Oh, yeah. She had a rubbish week and it's her birthday today. She'll be listening live to Nick Elm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club.
Well, I did read it. I read it at home on my way to...
Yeah, no, but if you're listening...
Well, they can look it up.
They look it up on Twitter.
I just thought I wouldn't... Anyway.
Anyway, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Asher. I hope the shout-out was everything you dreamt of.
This is like the birthdays on CBeebies. We could do those.
It's a bit like that.
If you send in a birthday card, we'll read it out.
Let's rattle through them. hi, you big balls. Hi.
You big balls.
Hi, you big balls.
Is that one each?
Love most of your stuff.
Oh, come on.
Fuck off. I think we would be great friends if we met. I'm not sure, actually. You've actually rubbed us both up the wrong way. Would you like to pop over to mine for a spot of tea and scone? For a spot of tea and scone, I live in the woods. Just look for tree number 4 and you'll find me. Thanks, Nigel.
What was that, Natalie? What was...
I bet Nigel wears ties with animated cartoon characters on them. Oi, oi, Savaloys!
Oi, oi, Savaloys!
Oi, oi! Oi, oi, Savaloys! Brian Johnson in the house! What's your favourite sausage and potato combination? Did you like Keith Harrison Orville or Molly Sugden? Cheers, your pips. Martin M.
And Martin McCutcheon, do you think?
Martin McCutcheon,
probably.
Obviously. Well, then that impression works for both of them.
Yeah.
What's my favourite sausage and potato combination?
Sausage and potato combination.
Do you know what I'll fucking tell you? I'll tell you this, right? I went to a fucking wedding once. I was a plus one, right?
Yes.
And I shouldn't have been there. I'd never met the bride and groom, right? And I'm not lying. It was in. It was not. I think the church was near Green Park. I can't remember the exact church, but I think we maybe it may have. Maybe the reception was in Green Park, and we got a bus from the church to the reception. So I don't know, but it wouldn't have been a really long journey. But it was a real fucking huge church, thousands and thousands. And thousands.
Oh wow!
It was like there was at least 1,000 people. There was a full choir, and I was going with my ex-girlfriend. Not at the time. And so we went, and the wedding happened, and the bride and groom, they walked past, but I didn't really get a good look because I was at the end of an aisle. They went up to the front, and I was so far away I couldn't hear any of the vows or any of the ceremony. You could hear sort of like echoes, but not much. Then they walked off, and I never saw them then. Then we all went to the reception, and I, there was absolutely no point in me being there other than a place filler, right? Or a seat filler.
Yeah.
And there was kind of like the reception room just had like loads of champagne and stuff. And I'd been there before because there was an after-show party at an award ceremony that I was doing PR for where Justin Lee Collins was hosting.
Fubar Radio's Justin Lee Collins.
And I tell you what, everyone enjoyed his company. He was a great host.
Before the...
This is during... He was filming the video and hosting an award ceremony at the same time. And it's kind of like...
Well, you say he's multi-talented.
It was thrilling. Because the way he changed character in between. It's like the opposite of me. It's like...
a talent.
Everyone admired the talent. Anyway, and he was great. He was really good at hosting that thing. So well, there was a moment halfway through the ceremony. It was the Golden Joysticks Award.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was a moment halfway through the ceremony. Oh, no, not even halfway through the ceremony. It was a real thankless task. Huge, huge, huge tables with, like, 8 people dotted around them in this vast ballroom. And then he has to go up and give out video game-based awards. And it's a dry event.
Mm.
And there was, like, a moment really early on when he just went, fuck it. And he just did this absolutely, like, he just made it all about every single person that won an award. And he bought more. And it was just like, you could just see the moment when he went, oh, let's go for this. And
yeah.
And I, you know, it was
great.
It was before. Mm, it was
before the fall.
Before the fall. But like, you know.
Great host.
He did that.
It was
good. Yeah. That award ceremony. It was good. He was good. And everyone was so happy to see him afterwards. It was crazy.
That is the way to do that, though, I suppose.
He went to the after show party the next year. I won't say who the host was, but they did not do that. It was the driest event ever. And then they said, do you want to meet anyone? He goes, no, not really. And then they just shepherded him off. So we're at this like venue. And it's like this big white room. And there are kind of... hidden doors, yeah, all around. And me and the group of people that I was with, who all kind of knew the bride and groom, we were there for the after reception, but not for the dinner. And so you get like canapes and stuff. And we worked out that if you stood by a certain hidden door, that's where the canapes came
coming out. Good,
and
good, good.
Just fucking bombard them.
Yeah.
And I was getting, they had these fucking mini bangers and mashes.
Oh, lovely.
And they were like bite size, and it was like,
What were they served on?
I think they were served in. I think they were served in sort of like a cone, and you'd get like a wooden spoon with it, a tiny little wooden spoon, and it came with the most. The mashed potato was incredible, a tiny sausage, but it was not like just like a regular chipolata, right? And this amazing onion gravy, and you could basically do it in one mouthful.
Oh, absolutely.
And you would just
lovely.
Go bang, 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 bang. They did like mini fish and chips as well, and sort of like.
I've had a little mini fish and chips.
In like a roll of fake newspaper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, but the fucking. Like a goujon of cod.
Mm.
just thinking about in the olden days when they used to wear cod pieces.
Mm.
But it sold out, so you ended up with a cod goujon. But That's a long way of answering your question, but what's your favourite sausage and potato combination? The three bangers and mash that I got at that wedding.
Bangers and mash is the obvious one, not chips with sausages. Mash, I think.
No, but I do like a battered sausage at a fish and chip shop.
Oh, same. That's my choice.
That's my starter. Get a battered sausage and some gravy.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Fucking hell. I could destroy a battered sausage right now. Fucking slide it down in one. I mean, it would catch on you with the crispy.
It's crispy bits.
It would catch. It would catch on your throat. What other combinations of sausage and potato are there?
Well, I'm trying to think.
Sausage,
you'd have like...
You could have like a sausage casserole with bits of potato either on it or fanned out on the top slices. I can't remember what that's...
Sausage and a bird's eye potato waffle.
There's no real other combination, is there? I mean,
bangers.
Thanks, Nigel.
Mash, that's your answer.
It's not Nigel, so it's Martin. So that is Martin your answer McCutcheon. To that, Martin McCutcheon. Did you like Keith Harris and Orville? I did, up until they did my uni.
Oh, was he doing a blue one?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that when they do their... They come back and do swears and...
What's how you say in Orville? You got your hand up me cunt!
Oh,
you know, stuff like that.
No one wants that, do they?
I don't think he ever said that. That's just something I've just made up for. But it was stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
Cuddles a monkey.
Cuddles would, you know, try and fuck a fresher.
Yeah.
At the bar afterwards, not during the show. Keith was passed out. I don't know.
I don't know how he did it.
I don't know what that was about. Molly Sugden.
She's from Are You Being Served? Do you like Keith Harrison Orville or Molly Sugden? Why can't we like all of them?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're unrelated, aren't they?
It's not either or.
Not in this case. No. So I liked Keith Harris up to a point and Molly Sugden. In answer to your question, it's Keith Harris and Orville. Hi, Nat and Nick. Nick, I love your cunt, but it would make my moon if Nat could call me one today. I love your cunt. It would make my moon if Nat could call me one today.
Make my moon.
I need the cheer up. Thanks, Texas Pete.
Oh. The real Texas Pete.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I've ever...
I don't know if I want to call
I don't think I've... Hand. Oh, that might be the first time I've ever heard you say that word. No.
Okay, Texas Pete, if I make your moon, you are a cunt.
Oh, my God. That felt awful.
It did.
Oh, God.
I'm worried like, if I
like,
say
that's
it.
Like when you find out that your dad's fucking Santa. I think that's the memory. Hi fan clubbers.
Oh, Ridley. Ridley was so great. So great working with Ridley.
But is that Ridley's talking about?
It's just John Hurt.
John Hurt.
Oh no, not again.
That's the line from Spaceballs, that's right.
Hi, fan clubbers. I'll get right to it. I'm currently visiting London for the weekend. I've seen posters for the upcoming Pretty Woman the musical. So far, so normal. But the tagline for the show is Big Musical, Big Huge.
Big New Musical, that's what it is. Big new musical.
Now, this just
big
painting
huge.
Doesn't make any sense at all. Surely it should be big musical. Huge.
Yes. He's right.
Why did they feel the need to mangle the quote? I know it's pedantic, but the tagline doesn't make any sense. What is happening? Please help, Lewis.
I'm with you, Lewis. I wouldn't like that at all.
Big new musical. What's the difference?
So rather than saying, it's going, big new musical, huge, it's like, big musical. Huge. It's just better. It's better scanned, doesn't it? So yeah. Adding in.
Yeah, but they're also trying to let you know that it's a new musical.
I know. I don't like it. I think it's a bit like. I remember years ago seeing a poster for Kim Marsh from Hearsay had a single out, and it said the great new single from Kim Marsh. And I went, well, don't say it's great on a poster.
Well, Kim didn't write it.
No, I know, but like, whoever's like, written it,
oh,
I don't
Kim,
like it has
can
an
you
opinion.
Just rattle off some fucking words for your poster.
Yeah, great, fantastic, wonderful, new, infamous musical.
And the guy in the Three Amigos goes, "You can't afford all of those words. Gonna have to shorten it." Hi, NN. That's us.
NN.
Would you like to come strawberry pick?
Why have we got so many fucking weird ones this week?
Would you like to come strawberry picking with me in my allotment? This would please me greatly, and I would desire to sprinkle the juice on my toes. Warm wishes, Danny D.
Danny Dyer's back.
Danny Dyer and Martin McCutcheon in the same.
Fucking hell.
No, I won't.
I really don't like much about that message.
Yeah, strange messages we get.
I don't really like being called NN.
I don't mind the NN.
Don't like that at all.
NN.
Dear Nick and Nat, long time listener, second time 5-star reviewer, see iTunes 2019, first time emailer, love...
I didn't do the brackets.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
Dear Nick and Nat, long-time listener, second-time first-star, 5-star reviewer.
See iTunes 2019.
First-time emailer. Love the show. Very much my podcast highlight of the week. Nick, I've only very recently watched Uncle.
Sorry for being late to the party.
And utterly loved it. I found it both funny and moving. I'm enjoying catching up with Eat Your Heart Out too. Nat!
Now,
I enjoyed hearing you talking about arse candling on the Beef and Dairy Network.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
What's arse candling?
It's a thing where you stick a candle up your arse on Ben Partridge's podcast.
Yeah.
Don't need to explain that anymore.
That's right.
I loved hearing you talk about Train to Busan.
Absolutely ages ago.
I'm also a fan of the zombie genre and think it is absolutely one of the best. Have either of you seen CL Station? It's the animated prequel, also directed by Yung Sang-ho. It's really interesting having an animated companion piece, but it's equally great and maintains the tone of the original brilliantly.
Yeah, it's not always possible. Remember when when Batman Begins came out? Was it The Dark Knight?
And then those animated ones, didn't they?
And it was just like, the tone is completely different from the fucking films that you're prequelising, you fucking wankers.
What an incredible waste of time. For the love of God, please keep up the good work, guys. Love from Matt.
That's a nice one.
Welcome, Matt. Thank you.
Good one, Matt.
I haven't seen Seoul Station.
No.
But Train to Busan, if you guys haven't seen it, I mean, fucking hell. Pull up your socks.
Dear Nick and Nate.
Nate.
Started listening to your podcast because I don't know enough about films. Enjoying it so far, and actually managed to impress my husband with my newfound knowledge of the Evil Dead movie. She said films. Taking my dad to see Emma tonight on your recommendation. You discuss venues quite a lot, so I thought you might like to know about a cinema we have here in Lincolnshire, which is a traditional refurbished 1930s cinema, called the Kinema in the Woods. This is an independent, family-run venue which regularly shows classics like Casablanca and hosts outdoor showings.
Sounds good. I think I have heard of this. I think when I was on tour, someone was telling me about this.
They are next door to an open-air swimming pool. This sounds familiar. They are next door to an open-air swimming pool.
Also a historic venue from the 40s.
And last year they hosted an outdoor showing of Jaws, followed by a midnight swim in an open air pool. The cinema always has an interval, which helps because the seats are horrendously uncomfortable compared to a modern cinema. And during the interval, a piano rises from the stage floor and a guy plays classic movie soundtracks for 20 minutes with a glitter ball spinning on the ceiling. Yeah, I have heard about this cinema. What I want to know is, when you're going to see a film, is the experience more important than considerations like comfortable seats? Much as I love the cinema, I miss the comfort and convenience of our local multi-screen cinema. Sure, that's a good question.
Well, I think mainly for me, I don't...
Hang on. Thanks, Amy. Kiss, kiss. Oh. P.S. If you are impressed by Johnny Flynn, you should watch Beast, which is on all four at the minute. I thought it was brilliant. All right, cool. Go on.
I think I don't necessarily think about seats, comfort, and things like that. But I do like to see something where, you know, you can, the sound's good, and
yeah,
you know, you're on a big screen and things, if I can help it.
Yeah, but there are less cinemas that are that badly set up.
I can't think of many where I've sat in there and just been like, God, it's uncomfortable.
I can remember being incredibly uncomfortable seeing films, but I can't remember which films. But I can remember the films. Do you know what I mean? So I think, and there is something to be said for seats that are too comfortable. At the beginning of the year, I kept falling asleep. I was an insomniac, but I kept falling asleep through films. I think they're two different things. I remember going to see Texas Chainsaw Massacre in a flea pit in 1998 with my friend when it was re-released in one location in London. It was ABC Cinema, which is now at Odeon Covent Garden. And I remember the seats were sort of like that orange and black kind of texture that you those coloration that you get on buses.
Yes.
Or underground. You know that one. It was kind of, I remember it really vividly like that, and I remember the floor being sort of like worn away a little bit, you know, the carpets, and it was like a real, like...
Yeah.
I just loved that cinema, though. ABC, I still got the tickets for it, and I still got the flyer that was like a postcard of that venue, and it has had a lot to do, I think, with how much I enjoyed that film, because you felt locked in, and you didn't feel 100%... I mean, you were safe.
Yeah.
But you didn't... it felt like scuzzy.
Yeah,
like the cinemas in American Werewolf, you know, it's the old cinemas in the West End before they redid them all, and I do miss that. I really loved that ABC cinema, so I think that there's that. But also, I don't know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I don't know how many times I've really watched it since I saw it at the cinema. It's still to this day one of my all-time favourite horror films, just because of how much that first viewing affected me.
Yeah,
And it's not the film's fault, but I'll get halfway through watching it on DVD or Blu-ray, and you're watching it on a small screen, and it just doesn't
have the same impact.
Doesn't have the same impact, and also, especially on DVD and Blu-ray, they clean it all up. But when you've got like these original prints of some films that are all sort of like, it feels fucked up.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's like a big thing, and also I would say that 1917, seeing that on IMAX. I came out of that film just thinking it was absolutely incredible. And I can't imagine watching that on a phone.
No, no. I think that might be the experience. I saw this week the John Wick movies. And, thank you. I saw 1 and 2 I've seen. And I don't know if it's like... I feel like people seem so invested in those films and sort of love them so much. And I felt a bit like, I don't know if I'm missing something and watching these on the small screen, but I don't feel like they're... Like, I was a bit like, they're all right. They're sort of fun and things, but I didn't really get the enthusiasm people seem to have for them. People just seem to have gone nuts for them.
I thought the first one didn't live up to its tagline.
Yeah.
But I thought the second one was incredible.
Second one's a lot better,
and
I haven't seen
the third one.
I haven't seen the third one. Not in a massive... I think the second one works. It has that great sort of set piece where you've just got him and the other guy, and they're basically walking through like a crowded subway, but no one really notices that they're trying to kill each other. And they've got like sort of silencers on their guns, and they're just sort of shooting these bullets off at each other while commuters are... passing them without really noticing that this whole thing's happening.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. But I just was like, it doesn't particularly... I think the action doesn't work that great. The first one feels like... It's obviously all Keanu Reeves doing it, and he can obviously do it, but it feels like they've cranked the camera so much to sort of speed up bits and slow bits down and things that you have this thing where it's like, well, it's hard to tell what's actually happening.
I remember in the first one thinking that... the framing was just so tight on him that you'd miss bits of the... I think they sorted that out with the second one. The fight that they have on the steps outside is just fucking incredible.
And you look at it and you go, oh, no, here's him doing it as well. But it's almost by cranking the camera and making it speeding things up and slowing things down, it actually just gives the impression that he can't actually do any of this stuff, and you're trying to make him look like he can.
I also watched a thing. The budget for John Wick was so small. I can't remember what it was.
I think it's 20 million, I looked at it or something, yeah.
But they have like some really kind of like fairly shoddy CGI when he's shooting people in his house. And then there was a YouTube channel that sort of like fixed all the CGI on it. And you go, oh, yeah, you can see like, oh, the CGI ain't that great. But I don't know.
It was all right. I kind of wonder if I'm missing something.
I give Keanu Reeves a free pass every time.
Oh, absolutely.
But then also, when you see something like Secret Cinema, when I went to see Back to the Future at Secret Cinema, and you just have a bunch of drama students that talk all the way over your favourite film, and you're in the rain, it's just like...
This is adding nothing. Yeah.
So I find that really weird.
I like to watch the film.
It's kind of like you want to be seen to be a fan as opposed to...
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, this isn't... You're making... Well, I suppose, but I just feel like you're making a film about you. And it's kind of like, I can enjoy a film without...
Yeah. I think that's the thing about... I'm very much
not that
like...
I'm better. And I, in actual fact, I bought some comic books from the stalls that they had... when they did the Back to the Future Secret Cinema, and they're hung on my wall, and they did a really good job. People love those things. I'm not judging anyone that likes
them. But I know what you mean.
I did find it kind of like, not this bit.
I sort of wonder if you want to. The best way to enjoy a film is probably to sit in the dark and just watch it. It's probably the best way.
Well, that's what's good about a cinema.
Yeah,
you know, like
the lights go down.
I try and get through Once Upon a Time in the West at home. And it's like, oh yeah, it's long, isn't it? But you go to the cinema and you're locked in.
Yeah.
I mean, Hateful Eight. When I went to see Hateful Eight, there was an intermission on that, and that I remember the intermission as much as I remember the film. Mm. You know, and the booklet that I got with it. So yeah, I think that it's different. You know, you have your favourite films. Some of my favourite films I've never seen on a big screen, and some of my favourite film experiences are only because of the cinema.
Mm.
So, it's a good question. Interesting. We should play a song because we haven't got time.
I'm
Nathaniel Metcalf fan club sur FIBA Radio.
Yes!
And we're back.
Natalie has put on a picture of some alpha bites, I guess, to suggest that you could have some alpha bites.
Well, what I would
with
do
sausages.
Is I would get the O.
The O.
And I would get the sausage.
Stick it through the O.
And I'd fuck that O with the sausage.
It's a good combination.
I wouldn't be able to fuck any of the other letters with the sausage.
No.
Because I'd have fucked them with my actual penis.
What would you do with a B? Oh. You got two holes on a B.
I would put it on its side and imagine they were tits. That's what I would do.
Less potatoes.
So, where were we? What have you seen this week? Have you seen anything this week?
Saw both John Wick films.
Oh yeah, right. How are you getting into that? You were just about.
I liked them. I thought they were very enjoyable. But I just was like.
I saw a press screening of the first John Wick, and I just came out of it thinking, well, that was okay.
Yeah, I think it's all right.
And then everyone went nuts for it, and the same thing happened with Mad Max. It's just like, I liked it, I just didn't like it enough.
Oh, I loved Mad Max, it was great.
I liked Mad Max more than I liked John Wick, but people lost their fucking minds, and I was just like, oh yeah, I just guess I didn't really. I liked it more than any of the other Mad Max films.
Yeah.
I just think that, I think Mad Max, well, I suppose it has had a remake, hasn't it? But you know, you go, don't remake a good film, remake a film that had potential.
Yeah.
And I think Mad Max is one of those films where you could go, yeah, absolutely. But
I genuinely didn't know how they did it. I just was like, how do you go about making this? I couldn't. Thought it was so impressive. Mm. And the bits where you've got the guys on stilts going between moving cars, yeah. And you think, and every shot lasts about 3 seconds, and you go, well, how do you do the setups for this? Like,
Have you ever been to Glastonbury?
No.
It's basically that. Only
basically, Fury Road.
Yeah.
I guess the dress is quite similar.
Cunts on stilts, bouncing around everywhere. Fucking.
On cars, while being shot at them.
Well, eventually.
Okay. The budget of John Wick doubled to 40 million. Okay, so it started, had a budget of 20 million and doubled, I guess, during filming.
Right.
I also saw this week, I saw Dark Waters. The Mark Ruffalo film.
Oh, is that good?
Yeah, I liked it a lot more. You know exactly what it is going in, but it is one of those things you get a real it's a real true life story about a lawyer
sort of
who finds out some water's been poisoned. Very Erin Brockovich-y.
Sort of thing that John Travolta would have made in the late 90s.
Yes. But it's sort of like a really good version, and you come away from it sort of your mind's blown, because it's a real company, and they're talking about this real company, and it just think. Oh, what an awful thing the big pharmaceutical companies are. So it does really make the point, and you go, God, I mean, like, if it wasn't obvious before, the fact that you can make a film and name them,
yeah,
it just shows that you're going, wow, I mean, extraordinary. That it's not even like that company go, you can't say that about us, we're two. It's just that they're like, yeah. Yeah, that did happen, didn't he? We got found out. It's a bit like that, you know. It feels very... It sort of makes that point, I think, by talking about real companies and who they are and what they make and everything.
Yeah, someone's got to do it, haven't they? But in actual fact, yeah, they do. It's just that I don't know who's going to watch that and it changed their opinion.
No, I don't think it changed my opinion, but I think it does reiterate that thing where you go, God, what an awful, like...
Do you know what it does, though? It brought attention to you about the pharmaceutical companies, yeah. And then there'll be people in the audience that didn't know about that. And then it will make people think twice.
Yes.
Some people, not all people.
Yeah. But, and you get a big star in it, and you go, there you go, it's a Mark Ruffalo film. And you watch it and go, God, is that... That's true, isn't it? All that, I suppose. I liked it, though. I thought it was good. It's done by Todd Haynes. A really odd film for him to do.
Todd Haynes that did...
Velvet Goldmine, and he did Carol. And
did
he did
Palindromes?
Palindromes?
No, Todd Haynes. Todd Haynes... Who am I thinking of? Todd Solondz.
Yeah, he's different.
Totally different. Well, that's why I thought it was a weird film for him to be making. So who's Todd Haynes? He did...
Velvet Goldmine. He did The Karen Carpenter Story. He did that one, what's it called? I'm Not There, was it? The one that's everyone playing Bob Dylan?
Sure. Isn't that the Joaquin Phoenix film?
Yeah, it's that one that's got everyone playing.
No, but Joaquin Phoenix did the one when he was a rap star.
Oh, no, not that.
What's that called? And then what's the one when he goes on a murderous revenge? I was never really here.
You were never really here, yeah.
I'm not there. And what's the one that you're talking about?
Maybe that's I'm Not There. God.
I'm Not There is the...
No, maybe that's that
isn't
one.
Isn't that the Joaquin Phoenix film?
Oh, God.
So what's the Bob Dylan film? Fucking... There. But I'm Not There is the Bob Dylan one.
I'm Not There, okay.
Okay, so you're...
I'm right on that one.
So what's the fucking Joaquin Phoenix one?
You Were Never Really Here?
No, that's the revenge film.
Oh.
I'm Still Here.
I'm Still Here.
So I'm Still Here. You Were Never Really Here.
Yeah.
And I'm Not There.
the I Wish You Were Here.
I Wish You Were Here, the Brighton-based 80s film.
We could have a Prince Charles all-nighter.
Oh, God.
It is confusing, isn't it? It's confusing for us. What must it be like for you guys, eh? Anyway, have you watched anything this week?
Have I watched? I watched Army of Darkness
again.
Yeah, but do you know what I did? I actually found the UK theatrical cut and a DV set that I've got.
Oh right, okay.
Had to buy it from Germany, but it's I've got something like 11 copies of Army of Darkness. It's just all different boxes and sleeves and stuff. Some of them are part of a box set, and I got a German box set. I've got one box set that's an Australian box set that's got the Australian TV edit of it.
Oh yeah,
and that has got stuff that hasn't even been treated in it. Just like stuff that they've crammed in.
Alternate
takes that are on like really grainy film.
Why would they have done
weird
that?
Lines, bad readings. It's. I think it was to boost it up to like 2 hours. Because it's an hour, it's an 80, the American cut is 82 minutes, the UK cut is 85 minutes, and the director's cut is 92 minutes. And the Australian cut has got loads more in it. And it's
a weird thing to do. So it's on telly, but they've gone, let's try and find extra footage.
It looks awful. It's on this weird Australian box set of it, which has like a lot of different versions, but not the UK cut. Because that's why I started watching the Australian one, because I thought this will be like the outside of America cut, or the other region cuts. But no, it's not that. And I found this German thing, and it's got the US cut, the director's cut on Blu-ray, US cut, director's cut on DVD, and then it's got the UK European cut. And a disc of DVD extras. I had to sort through a lot of boxes of Army of Darkness to find it, but I finally found my beloved favourite film.
UK cut.
Favourite cut of my...
That's the one I think of.
The only good cut of that film. Except for the... it's got the American ending.
Oh, really?
But I think it's the theatrical ending. It was the new ending. I don't think it's the American ending.
So it's not the one where he goes, you know, he wakes up 100 years later or whatever?
No, so it's not the Planet of the Apes ending. It's the supermarket ending. But I think that was the theatrical cut. And the reason, it's really weird, because before the internet, I watched Army of Darkness on VHS and it had the post-apocalyptic ending, which is great.
I love it. I thought that was it. I didn't know they'd changed it until I watched it years later and was like, it sort of blew my mind because that's one of the things I really like about the film.
It fits the tone of the film and also you want to see that sequel.
Yeah, you want to go, that'll be the next film.
Yeah. And he's not in another cabin. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, it's different again. But what happened was there was the original, that was the original ending, right? But then they changed it for the cinematic release. Because Universal thought it was too downbeat and they wanted something more upbeat. So they added in the supermarket ending instead. So that got released in all of the cinemas and sold to Sky, right? So Sky just bought the films straight from the cinema. Mm-hmm. Now, when they released it on VHS in 1993 or 1994, they put the original apocalyptic ending on it. So it had the UK European cut with the alternate ending. Right, and it fits the flow of the film and the tone of the film, and it's not like an extra. You've had your action sequences. It's not like this extra sort of like cheapo action sequence that's added at the end. But that supermarket version does have a couple of really good one-liners in it. So I'd watched the VHS thing like 300 times, and my mate, who we were becoming friends at school in during lunch break, would talk about films and stuff. And he had seen it 300 times, but he'd seen it on Sky and he taped it off Sky. And one day we just randomly talked about the ending and our stories didn't match. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about, the supermarket? I don't...
It's genuinely weird, I think.
And then so he taped it for me and brought it in. And then I was just like, oh my God, there's a fucking
did
completely
it make you,
different ending.
Did it make you think you'd gone mad?
Well, when he was talking about it, I was just like, what? I thought he was one of those friends that you have at school that lies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like they were saying, like when I was at school in like 1989, I had a friend of... We were very young, but people used to just say random weird shit. And one person said,
"Oh, you know, I've seen, yeah,
I've seen Batman 2.
Yeah, exactly.
it's got the Penguin in it. I think it was. It's got the Riddler in it.
Yeah,
Robin Williams is the
Riddler. Yeah, I saw it on Pirate. Saw it on Pirate, and you'd be like, "What? Right? How?
How have you seen the sequel to Batman?
Yeah, I've got it. Got it. Saw it on Pirate. Yeah.
But they say stuff, they're like, yeah, it's got Robin Williams as the Riddler in it.
Yeah,
Batman 2. And so I thought it was like one of those things, but no, it wasn't.
When I was working in the comic book shop, grown men would still say things like that, and you'd be like, what a world. You'd talk to them, yeah, I've actually seen it, and you go, it's just not true. But also it was at a time when you'd have like the internet. I think there was a guy who'd said he'd seen the Watchmen movie at one point, and it was like, well, it hasn't, because they haven't even started filming it yet, because it's you can read about it now on the internet because it's a worldwide thing and you just can't make stuff up anymore.
A grown man had said that he'd seen the Watchmen movie.
Yeah. Mm. And it was just like, well, you haven't because it's not been made.
Absolute fucking loser. Fucking hell. Fucking hell. The new Avenger movie's good, though. Got them all back. Robert Downey Jr. is in it.
Oh, great. Terrific. Got some new characters as well. Batman's in it.
And I've seen loads of stuff, but I watched Boxcar Bertha.
Oh yeah, I saw that once on
Who's That Knocking at My Door.
Never seen Who's That Knocking at My Door.
So that's the first Martin Scorsese film, is Who's That Knocking at My Door, and Boxcar Bertha was one that he did, what, 72?
For Corman, wasn't that? Corman movie.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. And maybe it was earlier than 72.
David Carradine?
Yes.
And I saw it once on Channel 5. And yeah, it's a fair. It's like a sort of B movie in it. It's just like a
yeah. Who's the woman in it? Out of Beaches.
Oh,
Barbara Hershey.
Yeah,
it's got young Barbara Hershey in it.
Oh,
she's
okay.
Gorgeous in that film. It's all right. It's a weird one.
Mm.
But I watched Boxcar Bertha first, and then I was like, oh God. Early Scorsese, and then Who's That Knocking at My Door? I watched after. Oh God, that is like, oh, this is the guy that made Goodfellas,
right?
You know? Yeah, that was really,
really good.
Well, it's good. It's not like really, really, really good.
Yeah,
but Harvey Keitel's good in it, and yes, it's got like, do you know what it felt a little bit like an unfunny version of Swingers?
Right.
It felt like it was about. It's black and white, and it felt like it was about a guy that was going through a relationship thing, and it captured a moment in a young actor's life or a young performer's life, and you go, yeah. And it felt like it was filmed on the hoof, and it was like it felt raw, but you also saw the potential of everyone involved in it and their future. It was great, yeah. And then I also saw The Good Son, starring Macaulay Culkin and Elijah Wood, which was sort of like this horrible thriller film about a murderous child. But what I wanted to say about that is it's fine. It's sort of like it's better than I've ever heard it was. Everyone has always like written it off. I remember that he was promoting it on Going Live, and Philip Schofield was just like, but of course, because he was like 11 or whatever. And he was like, of course, this is an adult film. It's an 18, isn't it? So you wouldn't have seen it. And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, I've seen it. No. How's that possible? You know, because they didn't want to promote this really heavily violent film to kids that love Macaulay Culkin. But Elijah Wood, was absolutely, has always been, like, he must be like 9 in that film. He is absolutely fucking incredible in it.
Wow.
Like, he acts like he has all of the emotions of an adult, whereas Macaulay Culkin feels a little bit like he's line reading, you know? But Elijah Wood is kind of, yeah, he's fucking incredible in that.
He's an interesting guy.
I just think he's got a really... He was. I always just thought of him as mega famous. And then it was just like... Then he did Lord of the Rings and it was just like, Elijah Wood's really famous. It's just like, has he always been famous?
Yeah.
Like,
you think of him as in Flipper. North
and yeah, Flipper. North and Flipper. I always thought he was famous. Especially, I think it's because you're a kid.
Yeah, they're sort of big...
And so when you're a kid, you feel like, oh... Elijah Wood's one of the biggest stars because I'm a kid and he's a kid.
Yeah, and also I think because you project yourself, don't you? You go, I can't believe this kid's in all these movies.
Yeah.
So you sort of think of him as like a big star.
Yeah, he was definitely a better actor than Macaulay Culkin was. But, you know, I guess he just kept his head down and made some good choices. Good old Elijah! Didn't do the Hobbit though, did he? So we're going to play a song and then we'll go and get our guest. What are you playing?
David Bowie, DJ.
It's not there.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's not? Okay.
Down to lies down.
Mickaël et Nathaniel Metcalfe fait un club sur FIBA Radio.
It was quiet, but I didn't have my headphones over my ears properly. They were just like perched on top and it sounded quiet to me. Yeah, anyway, there you go. Anyway, we're joined in the studio now by DJ Ironic.
Yes, I'm here, man.
Oh, you haven't put your fucking microphone. Oh,
can you hear me, yeah?
I told you, we're fucking professional. I tell you.
Hey, that's the best kind of show.
So are you Ironic now or are you DJ Ironic?
Do you know what? It's whatever I feel on the day. Today I feel just ironic, I think.
Okay, you're just ironic.
Yeah. To be fair, like whether I'm like DJing out or if I'm out DJing, then usually it's DJ ironic moment. But if I'm just
when you're a rapper, but you're a DJ for your own rapping as well. Do you have your own DJ as
well? No, I DJ for myself. So,
okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that does make sense.
Yeah.
So you're behind a laptop?
Yeah, behind. Well, I don't use a laptop. I use my USBs.
Right. And then so you're DJing in the middle of the stage, and then you're also rapping.
Yep, I'll go in front of the stage, rap on top of the song, go back behind the decks, press play on the next one.
I saw Craig David do something very similar.
Well, he took my idea, but...
Is that right? Of course.
No, I've seen him do that as well. Sure. He does it.
Oh, the crowd really loved it. Yeah. House of Pain, jump around. You go, yeah, well done, Craig. So you've got a single coming out.
Yeah.
Is it out or is it coming out?
It's out already, yeah. The video's out. It's out on all streaming platforms, so yeah.
Cool Poppy.
I guess that's it now, right? Because you have to have the video is part of the release, really. It's basically part of your YouTube hits will go towards... Chart positions and everything, right?
Right, yeah. So you just straight everything at once. Before it was like you put it out on radio first and then it goes out on iTunes or whatever and then it goes out as a video release. But now it's just straight everything at once.
And you've actually, because you're still a young man.
Yeah. I'm trying to be.
You're still a young man, but you have been in the game for a long time already.
Yeah.
You're incredibly successful straight out of the gate.
Well, it depends, because I started DJing when I was 13, but the actual mainstream success didn't come until when I was about 2019-20. So I put in a lot of work before that, but when I started writing and becoming a rapper, I was about 17-18, so it took a few years before finding my actual lane and then becoming a success, man. Sure. But I started young, so that's why I am still young, but I've been in the game for so long.
So you've seen lots of changes in the music business anyway.
100%. Seen a lot of artists do what I do, come and go. And just like from vinyl, I started out on vinyl and turntables to now USBs, like I said.
So when you say you were DJing at 13, were literally DJing for other people or for...
Yeah, for other people, I was just doing DJ sets in the club. So I was even too young to be in the club.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
I remember going on the Soul Solid Crew first tour when they were promoting 21 Seconds. And that was like the first club I went in. And just to see that, I think from there, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. So
right. So when you were turning up at 13, were you sort of seen almost like a novelty? Was part of the selling point that you were 13?
100%. Like, here's this young little kid behind the decks. I had to use like a stool to stand on. But I remember at the time, because I'm short anyway, but back then I was really short. But I remember at the time there was also another DJ that was really young and he was like my rival. His name was Little Charlie. So big shout out to him. But it was like either Little Charlie or DJ Ironic, which one's going to actually be this big DJ when they grow up.
Did you hate each other?
I don't have hate in my heart, man. But he was like my nemesis.
He was your counter, your other.
Yeah, no, big shout out to him. I hope he's doing all right now. So
that was you at 13. So at that time, were you already rapping or trying to rap? Do you mean like at 18 you found your voice, or that was when you first were like, can I? All that in the time in between, were you practicing and trying to get into it?
No. So I didn't have a clue about rap at that point.
Right.
I just wanted to be a DJ. And then when I turned 15, I started producing, which kind of then introduced me to listening to other types of music, rap music and UK rap music, and then wanting to be a rapper. And then I started producing for a lot of, you know, other rappers that have become big names now, Tiny Temper and Chipmunk and people like that. And then just seeing them made me want to start writing my own song. So from when I was about 16, 17, I started writing and being interested.
So it was kind of when you worked with kind of creative people, you sort of fed off that.
Yeah, and then just fell in love with that. So
you did music in GCSE.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
It was cool. I went to the British Academy of Music College as well after school, which was cool. To be fair, like my music lessons in school didn't teach me much, but I learned, you know, what I could from it. So
where's the British Music Academy?
is Bromley by Bow. So Dizzy Rascal's been there and a few other names. So.
You'd have been like, oh, that's local to me. Yeah. I'm in Bow.
Yeah? Oh, there we go.
Well, Dizzy Rascal's Bow as well, isn't
he?
There was a there was an arts academy over the road. I was in a sitcom, and when we were filming, it was the first sitcom, and there was an arts academy over the road from where from the house we were filming in.
Wow.
And I thought I was doing a very bad job. And I sat in a car with all of the producers and the director and the writer and everyone. And I said, you should probably let them know that I'm here and I could go in and give them a talk. And everyone in the car just pretended I hadn't said it.
Do you worry they went home and went, can you believe
how arrogant he is? We just drove back to unit base in silence, and I was just like, oh, fuck me.
Why did I say that?
I knew I was joking. Everyone thinks I'm a wanker. Fucking hell.
When you turn up, when you're a producer at 15, right, you walk into a studio, and there's the actor there. Are they expecting a 15-year-old to walk in and go, you got your producer coming in? This kid comes in. You'd be like,
not at all. Yeah,
are you kidding?
Like, what's going on here? No, it's all good, man. Like that, at that point, like, I don't know, I just felt like I was winging everything, like going along with whatever, learning new things, but just at the same time learning by myself and going along with everything.
But do you feel at that age that you had, like, because in a lot of ways, sort of doing comedy and things, you're... Like Nick often says that you can go out. We could go out and do gigs tonight, or do a gig somewhere.
Yeah,
And make some money.
Yeah.
And you can have agency over your career in that way. But do you feel like your career from like 13, 15 up is something that you've taken control over, or do you feel like your circumstance has put you in positions where you can sort of change and kind of become the kind of artist you've become now?
Do you mean like creatively? Like,
yeah, so were you like, how much were you is your attitude almost like, what an accident, I've fallen into all this stuff, I was 13 doing DJing and then I became a producer? And how much did you have that ambition and drive to actually change? And
I think a lot of it was myself, like, if I'm being honest, and also my family, and my mum was my manager for a long time, so she was a good support and helping me, you know, go for what I want to do. So just from when I knew I wanted to be a producer or a DJ, that is what I set my goal to be.
Yeah, so it's you. Like, you're your own drive.
But it's self-motivation.
Yeah. I would say until I got signed to a major record label, about 19 years old, that's when I think a bit of the creativity got lost a tiny bit, just because they had a lot of the control after that. And they kind of take control of your dream and everything from there, and it's all controlled by them.
And you don't like that, or you didn't like that?
It was okay. Obviously, it's good being signed to a major record label at the time, and you're young, and it looks good,
of course,
it feels good. But I think now I'm a bit more older, and I'm signed to an independent label, and I can do it how I want to do it and be more creative how I want to be. Mm. I prefer this way.
But like the first few years are sort of like getting your foot in the door and sort of like realizing that that's what you want to do, and that's what, you know, just seeing where it takes you at first, and then when you're sort of like doing it, it's just kind of like, well, hang on a minute, let's regroup and like, what do I actually want to do? What do I want to do with this, what I'm doing?
How far do I want to actually take this?
Yeah,
because every step, I don't think I knew that I was going to go that far and that far further every time.
Absolutely.
To be fair,
so by taking control as well, so you've got it in your head that you want to be doing this when you're in your 60s and 70s, you want to still be in this. It still feels like you want a career rather than wanting to be like...
Yeah, no, 100%. I think I'll always be somewhere in the music business.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'll be performing and still making music when I'm like 50, 60, but I'm, you know, working at a record company or being head of a label or something like that would be the dream, so... Definitely.
And you were saying, we were just talking about your single and that you're saying that's a single, Poppy, which is out now.
Yeah.
And it will be part of the new album.
Yeah,
it will. But the album is what you're working on currently,
literally right now, I just left the studio today. Just been trying to figure it out, really.
So how do you know the shape of an album then, when you've got a single, so you know that's on it?
Yeah.
But you've still got to create the shape of an album.
Yeah, I think I've got the shape of it.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got the structure, and I wouldn't really put out a record unless I've got that, because I need to know what we're doing for the next year, to be fair.
Exactly.
How do you structure an album?
For me, I go off sonically, so I have to listen each track by track and hear how it ends and how the next one starts, and just it has to feel right for me personally. That's just the experience that I've got from making a couple albums. But yeah, and just, you know, making sure we've got the right music on there, a bit for everyone, because I think my audience is very varied. So like,
so you got quite a broad audience.
Yeah, yeah. I can, you know, make some pop records and then really R&B records or hip hop. So I got to try and cater for everyone. But
and how many tracks do you write for your albums? I mean, I write music and I end up with so many. So many tracks that I haven't used, or I just could never quite work out. We got like to the a certain amount. Point.
See, I don't really do that. I make the amount that I've got in my head, because this is the trouble I always have. Like, how long should an album be these days? Especially now.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. It has to fit on two sides of vinyl.
Yeah. Well, my first album, I think, had 18 tracks. My last album had, I think, 14. I think this one, I want about 12, 13. I think it's just going to get shorter because people's attention span these days. And
Also, yeah, there's an AC/DC album that came out called Black Ice, and that had something like 15 or 16 tracks on. And people were complaining. They were just like, there's too many tracks. Yeah. And you go, and there was actually two songs on that album, which is basically, it's the same song. It's the same chords, and it's the same sort of like chorus, but there's just different lyrics. And you go, wow,
they haven't even noticed that they could have got rid of one.
They could have got rid of one. I think it's a really good album, but it was interesting to see that people were complaining that it was like it was too long. And then you go, yeah sure. And then I suppose if it ends up being really long, you end up just having a little bit of filler in there as well.
Yeah, that's what you don't want. Me personally, I listen to a lot of music, so I listen to a lot of albums, and I sit and I really like analyze how long can I really listen to this for? Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's that long, especially these days. So maybe a lot of artists don't actually listen to a lot of other music.
Yeah, what your own attention is.
Yeah, so they're just thinking, let's just put as much, this song's great, let's put that one on, this song's great. But I think you got to think about what people want to listen to. But
so you use a single essentially to promote the album as a thing, but it doesn't exist yet in its finished form, right? You've got an idea. So before you go in and do the single and an album, are you listening to other types of music? Have you got an idea of, I want this one to be more like X or Y?
Yeah.
And at that point, are you listening to other people's music and being like, well, try and get, I want to do something like this? Or do you go into it almost knowing exactly what the finished product
is? No, I do listen to a lot of other music, to be fair. I like to get a bit of inspiration from a lot of my peers, especially just to gauge what's going on, especially now, like doing this for over 10 years now. Mm-hmm. I need to kind of know what's going on so I can stay in the loop and keep up with what's going on. Otherwise, I just get left behind and I'm still making songs like I made 10 years ago, which I don't think can work these days. But so I try and listen to what's going on. But we do have different, like this record here, Poppy, is like more, just sets the tone for the album, I think, personally. Mm-hmm. So we've got that ready. So, yeah.
So, and when you say you've got quite a broad audience, so do you have, like, you've got quite a mainstream audience, and you sort of, you're catering to all the different, you're saying it's got mixed of kind of grime and R&B. Are you playing to those different audiences?
Yeah, I feel like I have to, really, because when I first came out, I was kind of going for the grime audience and the more underground kind of audience. When my music first started coming out on Channel U, that was the audience that I had. And then obviously making records like Tiny Dancer with Elton John, and that kind of just opened the doors to a more wider audience. Mm-hmm. We had to kind of make records for all them.
So. But you actually worked with Elton John on that?
Yeah, well, it was a sample, but he's obviously had to accept it, and he actually called me up when the song done really well and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, thanks for the money, he said.
Basically. Well, I think that record is actually his biggest selling digital record ever.
Oh, like, really?
My version of Tiny Dancer, yeah. So I think he did probably think, thanks for the money.
Oh, wow. But that's sort of, yeah, I mean, he does.
That's extraordinary when you think about that, right?
Making him relevant.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, no, it is cool. It's amazing.
And there'll be lots of people that never would have heard that. That will have heard your version of it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, otherwise, he's literally got to produce a film about himself.
Yeah, that's plan B.
I still haven't seen that film. I need to check it out, though.
It's got a weak ending.
Is it?
It would have been brilliant if he died, but.
Okay. Sorry, Elton. I didn't say that.
No. And that was me laughing. In case you're wondering.
That's amazing. And you've also worked with Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. The legend, the icon, Snoop, man.
How does that come about?
I'm telling you, all my collaborations have just been so random and just spontaneous, but you know, they're just sent down. But that one was we was basically working, me and my management team were working with Ray J in America, working on some projects with him and Chris Brown on some R&B stuff out there. And Ray J is related to Snoop Dogg, he's his cousin. And he was meant to have a track with him, but I think he didn't want to use the record anymore. So he said, "Do you want these Snoop Dogg vocals?" Snoop doesn't mind what you do with them. Obviously, you might have to pay him a tiny bit, but you can use his vocals. So we said, "Yeah, great, we're working on an album." So we took his vocals, we started making a beat around it. We sent it back to him, and he loved it. And then, yeah, was in the video. And
that's great. So they were just spare lyrics.
Yeah, that's how it is in America and in LA. Their Vogue songs are just sitting there in studios.
So people are just going and doing odd things in studios and leaving.
And like, "Do you want this one? Or I can have that one. We can swap verses." Or yeah, so that's how that one came around. It's totally random.
And then he came along and did the video.
Yeah, and he loved it. And obviously, he sees that obviously there's a market in the UK.
Of course, you know what I mean?
But also, you know, he's done all the work.
He has, yeah.
And so it's just sort of like it's someone else that's like taking it and giving it to an audience.
Yeah. He's just got to come shoot a video, smoke, and just chill.
That sounds.
And he's had a 30-year career, and it's kind of perfect for him, isn't it? Yeah, I guess to just come along
keep
and
keep it going.
Yeah. Wow.
So big shout out to Snoop, man.
Yeah, he listens. He's a big fan of this show.
I heard.
Yeah, he's been emailing us. He keeps bothering us.
He's a big fan of Mork and Mindy.
Is he? No. Could be.
Should we play your song?
Yeah.
Can do, man. Yeah.
We've been talking about it.
Yeah, man.
I don't trust anybody. They can get the corn like Poppy. I know man that savage like Robbie. The cool man boy, and they don't wanna hear no Ollie. And I'm just being honest, getting big like Wallace. Enough cards in my wallet, rich like Roddy. Call me out then I'm on it. Some days I got a bee in my bonnet. I don't take losses, not only teeth that I'm flossing. Been away but I'm still popping. Rings like Sonic, I'm just trying to be iconic. The name rings bells when you hear ironic. Any big hit then I'm on it. Any sneak diss, boy, stop it. My song's top of the pop it. Stay in your mouth like a locket. Boy, I'm just being honest. Yo, I was on waves before there were waves. I was in the shoops before they were raves. I was being Diddy way before I was Mace. I was getting money, now I put it in a safe. I was on waves before there were waves. I was in the shoops before they were raves. I was being Diddy way before I was Mace. I was getting money, now I put it in a safe. I want cash, not money. I ain't Kevin Hart, but I'm funny. You know these ladies love me. Never been bummy. No. I work hard for the food in my tummy. So this game I'm running. Shades on when it's sunny, but shades on when it's not. Pioneer, man, I'm cream of the crop. Straight to the top. I ain't even trying to take a loss. No. All I do is win like I'm Ross. You know the moolah make me happy. Enough bangers on my lappy. I don't do the chatty, but I like a patty. Them man talk, but them man capping. I'm just trying to sell the boat, something like a captain. I got the album ready. I take my time and I'm steady. You know this crown, yeah, it's heavy. I'm in my throne with a bevy. I just hope that you're ready. Yo, I was on waves before there were waves. I was in the shoops before they were raves. I was being Diddy way before I was Mace. I was getting money, now I put it in a safe. I was on waves before there were waves. I was in the shoops before they were raves. I was being Diddy way before I was Mace. I was getting money, now I put it in a safe.
I have to play the whole track.
You have to.
Even if it fades out, you've got to listen to it fade out.
Thank you.
No, it's great.
Poppy.
It's great.
Yeah, man. That's the first installment from the new album. Haven't got a title yet. We're about 95% done, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Why Poppy?
How did you know when you finished as well?
Poppy, because I mentioned that in the first couple of lines and I just thought it sounded cool.
Okay.
That's fine, you two were talking.
Sorry.
Over the entire thing.
And like, I'm really weird with music. Like, I think people look at a title and judge a song, and look at the cover and judge a song. So I need the title to kind of be different and things like that. Like, I don't know, I look at things weird. But yeah, sorry.
What did I say?
It was a good question, though.
It was a really good question.
Question.
Something about the album.
Oh, how do you know when it's finished?
Oh, okay. I think we're almost there. So just once I've got the title, we've already got a vision for the artwork. And yeah, once I feel good, man, I think it's just about feeling. That's how music should be. Once I feel good with it, once I'm playing it and everyone's happy, I've catered for everyone. Play it to my little sister, play it to my friend from the block, play it to my mum. Everyone's happy.
But do you ever listen to the stuff that you've done in the past and want to change it?
Yeah, but my early stuff, though. Yeah,
okay.
A lot, yeah.
Would you ever go back in and change it?
Yeah, my first album especially. I felt like
that'd be an interesting project, right? To try and go in and redo it.
I've thought about that.
Yeah, like Jar Jar Binks and stuff.
I've actually thought about that because Kanye West does that a lot.
Yeah.
He'll put out an album and then he'll edit it while it's out and then replace it.
Yeah, like Cats.
Like Cats.
Yeah, sure.
But we're talking then that, so yeah. Almost the way to do it now is almost not to necessarily have a single, like again, in the olden days, you would release a single where you'd try and have like almost your biggest track released first.
You have to
sell the album.
Right.
Whereas what you're saying now, it's almost you can do sort of, you're releasing things as if to say, we've got something coming.
Yeah, you can warm up.
Yeah.
With the streaming now, you can just warm up. So.
But then when they did Sgt. Pepper, they released what was it, Strawberry Fields?
Yeah, the double single. A side, was it?
Yeah, and there was Strawberry Fields and another one.
What is it?
It's not All You Need Is Love, is it?
No, I don't think so. It's Strawberry Fields and George, Penny Lane.
And okay. George Martin was basically saying one of his biggest regrets was that they had a policy that if they released it as a single before the album, it wasn't on the album.
Right.
And so he said one of his biggest regrets about Sgt. Pepper was that it didn't have those two songs on it.
Right.
And you go, I just assumed that they were on the album.
Yeah.
Why didn't he want to put them on the album?
I don't know, because I think when the album's out and you're releasing singles, you're basically out, it's their adverts for the album.
Okay.
Yeah. But then you have something like that Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, and I think every single track on that was released as a single.
Yeah.
And you go, what, you're just collecting them as individual discs?
Yes.
It was kind of, how much money do you want to make out? Yeah. Well, I guess as much as you can.
I think the album should have, you should think in your head that you've got at least 2 to 3 strong singles.
Singles,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got that planned as well, like to at least 2 big
when
records.
When I try and write a stand-up show
you need at least
like an hour, I think I need, I generally try and think of it in set pieces. And so I think you'd probably need 4 big jokes, but only 4.
So the rest are fillers for that whole album.
I mean, they are in my shows. That's not great. Poor reviews, but that's how I do it.
but you break it all up.
Yeah, you do try and think about it in set pieces and things,
also
right?
You go, you need like, so I have like 3 15 minutes and 4 songs and maybe a poem, and then there'll be a bit that sort of like brings the audience right down just before the end, and then you bring them up again. And that's how you do it.
That is how you do it.
That is how I do it.
I can imagine, If I go to a comedy club, I want to laugh at least 5 times.
5 times. Yeah. You can probably aim higher than that. If you're going to a comedy club and you're laughing 5 times, go to another comedy club.
Yeah. To be fair,
also,
I've only been
don't
once.
Come to my show. Don't come to my show. It's 4. Yeah. 4 is all 4 I'm guaranteeing.
It's all you're aiming for.
It's all I'm able to do.
So don't set yourself short. If you wanted to aim for more, you could do it.
Yeah, I could try and do 5.
It's by design.
Maybe that's how I do it.
So it says here that you are a fan of Big Daddy.
Now, I mean, what do we mean there?
You mean the Adam Sandler movie and not the 1980s wrestler. Didn't he kill someone doing the daddy splash?
I think that's a schoolyard room, I thought.
Yeah, big fan of that film. Big growing daddy. Up. Yeah, just reminds me of my childhood.
Mm.
You guys.
Are you a big Adam Sandler fan anyway?
Yeah, I'm a big Adam Sandler fan.
Yeah.
But that's how not a lot of people agree with that.
Yeah, I know. Nah, they're idiots.
I know. You guys are big fans, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the more annoying conversations that you have as an Adam Sandler, I guess, apologist, but a fan.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not an apologist. I can acknowledge that he's made
some
shit films,
especially lately.
I think Ridiculous 6 it's like 2.5 hours long, and there's no jokes in it, and it's so long.
Yeah, even I'd have 4.
Fucking hell. Yeah, exactly. It was worse than one of your shows.
Yeah,
<isn't>
that?
There was like 3 laughs. But so But I stuck with him, and his, some of his later films are so bad that when you go back and I've said this before, but when you go back and watch Little Nicky, you go, "Oh my god, it's not as bad as I remember."
Yeah.
Some of his films are so bad.
Some of the new ones, yeah.
But people always go, "Yeah, I like Adam Sandler, Punch Drunk Love," you know.
Yeah,
that's not an Adam Sandler film.
Definitely not.
He is in it. Someone has written it to be like a thing, but that's just like saying you don't really like Adam Sandler. No. If your only Adam Sandler film that you
definitely
like is
not.
Punch Drunk Love and Uncut Gems, but.
So you can tell I'm a fan because that Big Daddy's an early, early one.
Yeah.
What was his last good film though?
Click.
I don't know. Like.
Oh well, have you seen his special? I go on about it all the time. His special is incredible.
Is it on Netflix?
100% yeah. Fresh. Okay, it's called 100% Fresh.
It's very good.
Okay. Really,
good.
Really great.
He sings too, right?
Yeah. It's mainly songs, but it's just one of those things. I mean, I'm talking about it again. I've talked about it so much. I've seen it. I don't watch a lot of comedy.
Okay.
I've seen it like 12 times.
Okay. I need to check it out.
It's so
I'll
good.
I'll watch it tonight.
and also because I always think of him as like your home team. Not that I'm into sports, but it's just like, and you go, oh fucking hell, we're at the bottom of the league, and then all of a sudden you go, he brings out 100% Fresh and you go, yes, I knew it. If
we're
I stuck with him, I knew he'd do it.
Have you seen Uncut Gems?
Not yet.
It is well worth
it. Is it good though?
It's a great
really
film.
Good.
Is it?
It's good.
Great film.
Have you seen Goodfellas?
Yeah, of course.
You know the bit
classic.
When he's on cocaine and he's like trying to make dinner for his brother and get the gun to someone? It's like that for 2 hours.
It is like that.
It's fucking
is it?
Stressful.
It's intense.
It's very, very intense.
It's a 2 hour version of that.
The trailer didn't really.
It's not. I mean, it's not a comedy.
I didn't like the trailer. I didn't. I thought everyone was going nuts for it, and I was like, I don't see the trailer.
But it's good, yeah. Mm. Okay,
yeah, really, really good. Especially if you like him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah,
I feel like he's like he's been beaten around a lot. You know, people just shat on him for
but
years.
But it's good. He's got a serious role now.
In
that one, so I need to check that out.
Every so often, he just proves himself.
Yeah,
and you go,
But then I'm not sure he thinks about his career that way either. Right?
No.
I think it's just like something comes along and he'll go, "Oh, I'll do that." But I think he's quite happy doing his like the movies he makes.
His wife is in every single film.
Yeah,
so she always gets a cameo in all of his films. And all of his mates are all in all of his films.
Yeah.
And you just go, and he's like a multi millionaire. And I think Netflix have just given him like another 4-picture deal.
Wow.
And you just like go, just
keep going.
Because when he started doing, I mean, he's a pioneer basically. Because when he started doing Netflix, everyone was like, fucking, oh, good luck, mate.
Straight what's he doing? Yeah.
straight to DVD, straight to Netflix. Yeah. Now Martin Scorsese's doing it. And you go, he was one of the first people to do it. Yeah.
What was the one he'd done with Jennifer Aniston on
Murder Mystery?
What did you think of that one?
They're all right.
It was all right, I thought that. Was
but they're making it. I was saying to Nat earlier, it's the biggest streamed film in Netflix history.
Oh, wow.
And they're making a sequel to it. So it's done, it's done really well.
I guess that's the thing about Netflix. It's not one of the ones you hear about.
Yeah.
But it's probably, there's more people watching it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But even Friends is the most watched TV show.
On Netflix.
It's the most watched, not TV show, most watched thing on Netflix is Friends.
No way.
So they've teamed up Aniston. Sandler.
Yeah.
That's their big. That's probably how they did
that's
it.
Probably
they probably, when
it,
they went.
Numbers.
Yeah.
Just bring them together. Yeah.
Perfect. Our audiences love Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston.
True. Yeah.
This is going to be. Write a check.
Netflix is the world's audience. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
The whole world loves Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
And Adam Sandler.
Basically.
Wow. All right. Well, I like Big Daddy. Big Daddy's but I really, really love Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, yeah. Another favourite, to be fair.
That's great.
Big Daddy just reminds me of when I was growing up. I used to always watch it.
Not judging.
Yeah.
You're allowed to like it.
Okay.
I'm just saying it's not my favourite out of all of it.
What is your favourite?
My favourite is probably I really like, I know you're not allowed to say it, but I really like That's My Boy.
Yeah, okay. I like that one.
Okay.
It's just so crude and it's just like you can fucking hell.
I'll be honest, I was quite snooty of Adam Sandler films when they came out. I thought I was better than them. And then I watched Happy Gilmore on TV. Thinking and being a bit, oh, this is on. Yeah. And being a bit eye-rolly. And I was on the floor laughing. I thought it was so funny.
I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. You eat pieces of shit for breakfast?
No.
It's funny.
I was really surprised. Yeah. But at the end of it, it was one of those moments where you go, well, I've been wasting my life.
Yeah,
like, I think I'm better than this, and I'm not at all. This is exactly what I want.
And then you go back and you try and watch all of these films, and you end up with Coneheads, and you go, oh, no, not Coneheads.
Chuck and Larry. Yeah.
I fucking, I love him. And I think what comes across is that he's like a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
And you also like Hitch.
Yeah.
The Will Smith film.
Yep, classic for me.
I'm less.
Oh, we can connect there. Yep. Now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, starring Kevin James, who also stars alongside Will Smith in Hitch.
Hitch. There we go.
Yeah, did it.
I'm less into Hitch.
No, you don't like it?
Will Smith has an allergic reaction.
Yeah, that's it. One of my favourite bits.
Yeah. No, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, that's good.
Will Smith, most likable man on the planet.
I like Will Smith. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of Hitch.
That film, okay.
Not a big fan. I'm not, again.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Judging.
It's all right. It's all right. What, do you like Hitch, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it that much.
No.
Yeah.
I think I've seen it once.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked Hitch. But, you know, there's a lot of films. Why do you like? What do you like about Hitch?
It just, again, it reminds me of my childhood, really.
What is
or
the,
just growing up.
What is the concept behind Hitch?
So he's like a professional dater, basically. He knows how to get the women. And Eva Mendes, I gotta say, she was my crush when I was younger as well. So all of these things remind me of, you know, my childhood.
Yeah.
Kevin James doesn't know how to get the ladies, and Will Smith kind of just instructs him and teaches him how to become a ladies' man, basically. I'm not really selling it.
No, you are.
No,
do
you know what? Exactly, it makes me think. Yeah, it's probably quite good.
It's a classic. Yeah.
I do like. Yeah. See, that's what it is. I think maybe I'm a fan of rom-com.
It's really good, but it's really unusual it's a sort of like an odd film for Will Smith to make.
Yeah, because he's not really the main.
Well, he is the main guy, but it's like not like.
His others, really.
Yeah, he's not Independence Day. It's not Bad Boys, and it's not like, and it's not one of his dramas. Like, what's
it? Pursuit of Happiness.
£7, or was it £8? Or was it £9? £9.
I've never seen £7.
£6.99 in some shops. It was £7. It's good. That film's. Is that good or is it really?
It's
impressive?
Weird, isn't it?
I think it's weird, one of those.
But
really.
He either does dramas or he does. I mean,
action.
Or he does action.
I suppose a film like Hitch is to open himself out to a bigger audience. So he's selling people to. He's going. Yeah. I'm getting the rom com crowd, and they're all going to sign up to the Will Smith brand.
That's what he was doing probably at that time.
I'm 100%.
Did you see Aladdin?
Yeah, I did see Aladdin. I quite enjoyed it.
You're coming with me. All I'm going to say is the bit. Have you seen the cartoon?
Right? Yeah.
I'm going to say this every time we talk about Aladdin, right? You've seen the cartoon.
We talk about Aladdin most weeks.
Now the bit when
specifically
Jafar,
this bit
when Jafar gets turned into the genie.
Yeah.
Right. And he's getting sucked into the lamp. Right. And as he's going out, he goes out and he grabs the parrot Iago, and he goes, "You're coming with me." And he grabs him, and he sucks him into the lamp, right? Yeah. And now they're trapped together because he was his sidekick. But in the live action one, the parrot is just a parrot. So when Jafar is getting sucked into the lamp, and he goes, "You're coming with me," and he grabs pretty much an innocent bird.
Yeah.
Right? You know, what has he got against the bird? What's his thought process? Out of all the people he could have grabbed in the room, he grabbed a parrot. Right?
So the parrot is probably just going,
I'm just
a parrot.
Just to be locked in eternity now.
Just to be fucked to death for an eternity in a magic lamp. Anyway. that was my takeaway from all of that. And also I went with my girlfriend at the time, and she is a huge Will Smith fan.
Oh, okay.
And the only thing she said at the end of the film was, "Poor Will Smith." And you go, oh god, I was trying to put on a brave face for you, but yeah. Yeah.
Still, I saw
Bad Boys 3.
I haven't seen that yet.
Great film.
Is it? Yeah.
Loved it. Mm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't. To me, I watched it, and I watched it, and Nick had seen it and said, "It's all right."
It's all right.
I saw it.
A lot of people said it's good.
I loved it.
It's better than the second one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's a kind of. It's a movie about older people. It's a movie, but that's what I liked about it. I thought it was like the perfect.
It's like the older version of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
So it's like. But I'm yet to find people that are like, I loved it too. But also, yeah. It was like in the cinema, even looking round.
Yeah.
Do you know, like when the whole audience, you can tell, are having the same experience.
Yeah, so it
felt like everyone, it's almost like you want to look at people and go, I mean, this is great, right? It's almost like everyone was like a bit surprised as well. Like it just felt like the mood in there was great. It was such a nice room to be in.
And I woke myself up through snoring during a car chase. So,
oh, you fell asleep?
Yeah, I was really tired.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those things when you're like, you're going, and you're nodding off like throughout the entire thing, and then you just like, oh, I'm just going to close my eyes for a little bit and listen to it. Oh, God. And then all the other reviewers from Empire are sat around us, and you go, yeah, we're not really journalists.
Well, I was reading your biography. It said you, one said you're from Brighton, one said you're from North London.
Yeah, someone else told me this yesterday.
Oh, right. What is the truth?
I'm from London.
So why
from,
why Brighton?
From
why
Wood Green?
No, I'm not even from excuse me, I'm not even from Wood Green. So I don't know. So you had two bios. On
One said you were born in Brighton.
Wikipedia says Brighton. Does
Wikipedia say that?
Yeah.
So we need
why
to change
Brighton?
It. I don't know. That one place said my name was Michael, which my name ain't Michael.
I was going to say, I don't think of you as being a Brighton person talking to you.
Yeah.
Whereabouts are you from in North London?
I'm from like Muswell Hill area.
Oh, really?
You know
Yeah.
That's where I was born.
So when you go to the Brit school after going to school.
Yeah, it's far.
It's far,
yeah,
right? I live in Bow, and if I've got to do a gig in Crouch End, it's a bore.
Yeah, yeah. So I had to get the train every day, and the journey was long.
W7 bus from Finsbury Park?
No. Just straight train from Highgate train station.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
But I knew that it was worth it because it was towards what I love to do, but it was just a long journey.
And you grew up in Muswell Hill as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Born and raised, man. So not far from Wood Green, but.
No,
not quite.
And I guess not
it's
a million
not Wood
miles.
Green.
Off.
It's not at all.
No,
really.
But people
different.
Just people. I mean, it's just people guessing at stuff.
Yeah,
and then other people correcting them slightly.
Yeah,
and it's just like it's a bit like a religious text, where it's just people are self-editing over the years. I was the son of Levon Helm, who's a musician.
Oh yeah, someone said that, did they?
Yeah, and then that had to be corrected.
People just make things
make
up.
Make stuff up.
Yeah.
So you still Muswell Hill now?
No. I live out of London.
No.
But my mum and family still live around there, so I'm always there visiting. But I'm more like Essex area now.
Essex, whereabouts in Essex? Yeah,
Chelmsford
okay.
area. Yeah.
Again, long way from.
It is.
Muswell Hill.
It is. Yeah.
How'd you find Essex?
I like it. Where I am is quite chilled and relaxed and quiet. So.
Is that where your studio is?
Yep. My studio is in my house. So,
what does your studio look like?
Not too fancy. It's just two speakers, my computer, my mic, my mixing desk thing.
How does your studio compare to the FUBAR radio studio?
It's kind of similar, to be fair.
Okay.
Two speakers.
Okay.
Yeah. You've got more mics than me, though.
Sure, we need them.
We've got three people.
We'll share one.
like a singing group from the 50s.
But yeah, pretty simple setup. You know, like after I'd done my first album, or even during I'd done the first album, the label tried to put me in these big, massive studios, and I couldn't really be myself, if I'm being honest.
Also, in the music industry, are you also being charged for that as well?
Yeah.
So it's that thing where they put you in like a big studio, but then
you have to
the
give it
back end
to them.
Is coming back.
Yeah,
you're paying for
your
it somewhere.
Advance.
Yeah,
yeah. Of course. £500 a day sometimes in these massive studios. But you're not knowing that or thinking that at the time, of course.
So what's next? What do you have a like long term plan? Do you think about that?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So obviously we've got the new album, that's next. This year we're really busy with festivals
and it's like you're touring.
We're going to be in, got a few shows in Dubai. I'm in America this year, Florida, Houston, Texas, a lot of shows in the UK. But aside from that, I really want to get into a few other avenues. So I really want to get into A&R in a bit more for a few record companies, a few publishing companies I'm in talks with at the moment about becoming head of urban departments at A&R there. So something like that will be perfect for me.
And that's sort of like just kind of like covering the bases, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like learning as you go and then expanding a little bit as you go.
To
so
more,
that at
yeah.
one point you could either transition over or you could just be...
Do both.
Do everything.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point.
So that's it. So from the point you are 13, you've basically gone, right, I'm staying I'm not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, and I'm doing a bit of everything, yeah.
And that's how you do it, I guess, to have a long-term career.
I guess so, yeah, hopefully, yeah. I guess that's how all the greats did it, you know.
And what's your life like? Are you always super busy then? Have you always got your fingers in, like, several pies? Are you...
Kind of, yeah. I always try to stay busy. To be fair, like, I don't really like not doing much, so I'm always recording or doing something out and about, filming videos in the clubs, DJing as well. Still, you know, just trying to be busy, really. So, yeah.
What do you play in clubs, or does it depend on the club?
It depends on the club. I play whatever, man. I play a bit of everything, so commercial, hip-hop, whatever, house.
And what clubs are you playing? What kind of... Are they kind of commercial clubs as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, at the moment, they're usually the commercial ones, so I probably mostly play a lot of commercial stuff.
Okay, so then it just depends. Yeah, you've got to then play...
The housey kind of...
Have you ever DJed on the top of a massive skyscraper?
No, I'd love to, though.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
How do we do that?
I don't know. It's just the sort of thing that you'd see in a
film. Like one of them sit down. Have you seen them restaurants where you sit in the sky and eat?
Yeah.
You've seen them?
Yes, where it turns.
Yeah, yeah.
The, you
I'm
know,
sure.
Like a revolving restaurant.
Sure, but yeah. I mean more like an open top one where there's people at the top of a thing.
Raving.
And they're all having like cocktails and stuff, and then there's a DJ over there, and then there's like... Tony Stark is there.
That's in a bar with you after your gig in Leicester Square, that bar.
Oh, fucking hell.
Right. That had a DJ playing, but the volume, it was like, it was almost like, I don't know who it's for. Like, everything about it was just odd.
Was
the
so
whole thing
low.
It was so low that it was just like,
what's the point?
So it's not like you'd be listening to it. But then it's like, but it's almost like it makes like a virtue of having a DJ. Like it wants you to know there's a DJ there,
yeah.
But it's like, you can't hear it.
So
it's like,
no,
it's just like, it's almost like they've gone bit quiet. But he's there, but it's almost like you want to go, DJ? But it's like, he's just like, turn it down,
yeah.
Man. I couldn't, it was just totally mad. The whole place was
Every
mad.
Every so often someone would buy a bottle of champagne and then there'd be like a procession of women in bikinis
yeah.
with
just
sparklers
running
coming
over.
Out of
okay.
it.
Yeah, it was such
and
an odd
go,
place.
Wow, this place is cool. Can I have some nuts, please? And then they'd bring you over. But to tell you what, those fucking nuts were delicious. Did you have any?
I did have some nuts,
they were
actually.
Absolutely
though,
amazing.
Is
nuts
it,
were.
Yeah.
And also, there was they ran out of like the beer I had and just brought me a different beer. And I said, oh, I didn't order this. They went, yeah, we ran out.
Oh,
and it's like,
have that.
Well, do I have to pay for this?
That's crazy. Where was that in Leicester Square? Yeah.
It was it's a W bar.
Oh,
W
yeah, I think bar. I've been there. Yeah, in the hotel.
And
it's got easy place to DJ.
Yeah.
Put
on
what you like. No, no, no.
It's got, you just play them out of your headphone speakers.
Off my phone.
Yeah, it might as well be. It was like that. It was like someone was playing his phone
like
or something.
It's really tinny thing in the background.
What's that?
The male toilets were confusing to get into.
Oh, it's like a mirror. A wall of mirrors. You don't know where you're going through. It's like the end of Man with a Golden Gun.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that.
Or the end of... fucking Skyscraper with Dwayne the Rock Johnson. Yeah.
Exactly.
And there were just sort of like commemorative plates all over the walls.
So you have to kind of figure out how to...
Yeah, which one's a door and which one's not me. The one I was trying to shoot me all the time.
I wouldn't bother. So I wouldn't waste your time.
No, to be honest, if they're paying you, by all means do it. Easy.
If you're in town, yeah, sure. Yeah. But I wouldn't travel in for it.
Not from Chelmsford. Not worth it.
There's no glory.
But yeah, even Muswell Hill.
Oh, too far.
Too far.
But yeah, we're still DJing all over. I've actually got a show this weekend as well.
Oh, so where are you at this weekend?
I think Burnley near Oxford.
Okay.
So yeah, that should be fun.
When did you go to Dubai?
Mid-April. We're actually filming the next single over there as well. So
yeah,
that
of course.
Should be cool.
Yeah, no, but while you're there...
Yeah, you have to.
Get some production value.
Yeah.
Did you see the JC Beyonce concert?
Where's that on?
It was on like 2 years ago.
No, I didn't
went
see
to see it at Olympics...
No.
At the Olympic Stadium.
Was it good?
It's not... I mean, it's not really my thing.
Yeah.
Like... I just think Beyonce's got an amazing voice, but it was just like, where are the tunes? I just couldn't quite pick up. But the fucking screens that they had.
Crazy.
Like, the budget that they've spent on all the music videos. They're not music videos. They're just a backing video for their concert. Like, I've been to a lot of concerts. This is the only one where I've just been kind of like going, how fucking much? Every 5 minutes, you're going, how much does that fucking cost? To get like a 30-piece... brass band with huge shiny instruments all in matching red suits in this grid where there's like nine grids, and there's like three musicians in each grid, and then you've got Beyonce, and Jay-Z had like three costume changes before Beyonce even changed her costume. She's got a hype man that comes on, and it's just like, you're married to a guy that can do that. Do you know what I mean? It's like
oh, they've got the money for that.
But the videos were just fucking insane. Yeah. So yeah, get on a drone.
Try get it.
get your camera on a drone and then film you in Dubai.
Yeah, Nick and I once went to see Claudio Simonetti. He's in a progressive rock band called Goblin, who do lots of soundtracks to horror movies. Okay. Went to see him, and he had videos as well playing in the background. But all his videos were of him playing with a different band, right, in much bigger venues, as if to go,
I've done this.
It was weird.
There was one of him in like he's Italian, and there was one of him in an Italian square, like, and there was a camera. It must have been on a helicopter. It was four drones. It was like zooming over like 10,000
tens of thousands of people. It's like, yeah, I do big in Italy. I do big venues.
We were in
an electric ballroom.
Electric ballroom in front of 30 people. Oh, okay.
Loving it, having a nice time.
Yeah, it was brilliant, great stuff.
We've got to play the game now. This is a game.
Oh, we've got a game, yeah.
Okay, this game is called Better or Worse, and you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my own opinion.
Okay.
Okay. All starting right. with Daniel Day-Lewis, right?
Yeah.
Is Daniel Craig better than Daniel Day-Lewis, based on my opinion?
Worse.
Worse. He is worse. Craig T. Nelson. Is Craig T. Nelson better or worse than Daniel Craig?
Better.
Is Mr. T better or worse than Craig T. Nelson?
Better. Yeah.
Worse. Craig T. Nelson.
Craig T. Nelson didn't do the A-team.
He didn't.
He didn't even do a Snickers advert, although...
Ice T, better or worse than Mr. T?
Better.
Yeah.
God, Mr. T's taking a
Vanilla Ice, better or worse than Ice T?
Worse.
Yeah. Al Pacino, better or worse than Vanilla Ice?
Better. Yeah.
Robert De Niro, better or worse than Al Pacino?
Al Pacino, better or worse than Robert De Niro?
He's worse, I think.
Al Pacino is worse than Robert De Niro, I think.
Christian Bale, better or worse than Robert De Niro?
Worse.
Yeah. Holly Hunter, better or worse than Christian Bale?
Better. Yeah.
Harvey Keitel, better or worse than Holly Hunter?
Worse, yeah.
He is worse, I think. I reckon that's a high...
I think they're both medium cards.
Holly Hunter's high. Yeah. High card for me.
Really?
Did I do good?
Nine? Yeah, I knew it was good.
Fucking hell.
I knew it was good. You're up there.
Well, you scored. You've got the joint highest score with Tom Crowley, Tim Downey, Reese James, Marshall, Julius, and Ramona Shrankinathan with 9.
Okay.
And you've beaten Omar Alleyboy, Paul Gallen, Nick Disembly, and Naomi McDonald.
You're also better than
Jasmine Therese with 8. Kevin Ellison, Joe DaCosta, Alistair Green, Lloyd Griffith, Max Halley, Harriet Kemsley, Kim Newman, Morgan McGlynn, Juliet Sear, The Last Skeptic, David Trent, Toby Williams. Williams, Mark Watson with 7, Bronte Barbie, Jay Foreman, Will Jackson, Ginger Johnson with 6, and Josh Barrow, an original flavor with 5. Lovely boys, though. They were lovely boys.
5, exactly, 5. It's a joke. We had someone with 3 last year, but of course, that does seem unbelievable.
I think that's debatable. I thought that it was lower than that.
So considering you got 9,
yeah, I've done good.
You've done 3 times as well.
No one's had 10, yeah.
No one's got 10. Could have done one more, man.
Next time.
What would I have got, though?
We'd have to figure that out after.
Well, at the end of this season, which is in like 3 weeks, right?
Then we work out.
Then we'll send you a goodie bag.
Okay.
probably have a mug in it.
Yeah, I need one of them.
I've never seen that phone get used. You'll probably end up with one of them.
One of these mics from my studio.
A mug and a landline. thank you very much for coming in.
That's all good.
Thank you. Thanks
good luck with your single and good luck with your album.
Have you got a date for the album yet?
No date, no title yet. Okay. But I'll come back when we're quite ready. Yeah, summer definitely.
Summer.
I'll be ready, yeah.
Right. And we're going to go out on your very favourite song.
Hey.
Oh, sorry, no.
Not that one. No, it wasn't that one.
I was thinking, is that one?
They wish and I wish and I wish and I wish and they wish on me. Yeah.
I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me. Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me. You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't wanna die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wishing on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They gon' tell the story, shit was different with me. God's plan, God's plan. I hold back, sometimes I won't, yeah. I feel good, sometimes I don't, hey, I finesse down Western Road, hey, next. Might go down to G-O-D, yeah, wait. I go hard on Southside G, yeah, wait. I make sure that Northside E,